Our last speaker for the morning is Jessica Moorman, who is from the Evangelical Environmental Network. Her title is Engaging Churches on Climate Science and Climate Action.
So if you didn't know, yesterday I lost my voice. I came down with laryngitis, and I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone, all of the organizers who just quickly pivoted and made space for me to speak today. And so it's really wonderful to literally be speaking to you this morning. And so today I'm going to share with you some lessons that we've learned, and this is a collective we from the Evangelical Environmental Network over the past 30 years. We are celebrating our 30th anniversary this year. And I also have to say thank you to so many folks in this room who are part of those 30 years. And so, again, I just want to say thank you. And it is my honor to present some of these findings that we've had on your behalf. So I want to start off with this question and invite you to really vision with me on this. What would it look like if the church really took seriously our biblical mandate to care for God's creation? I'd love for us just to pause for a minute, just even close your eyes. What would that look like? Right now, today, what would that look like, the fruit of that, 50 years from now, 100 years from now? So as things come to mind, we don't only have to look to this proposed future for what this might look like. We can actually look to the past. Because the truth is that caring for creation, this isn't a radical new idea that we are bringing to our brothers and sisters in Christ. It's actually foundational to the Christian faith. This has actually been orthodox within the Christian faith and something that we've lost more recently over the last several decades. Again, we don't only need to look through scripture, but we can look to some of the foundational theologians of the Protestant Christian tradition. And you can look back even further to those in the Catholic tradition and the Orthodox traditions. But we look at John Calvin. This is back in 1554. He is writing about this stewardship doctrine that we are given God's creation. God has entrusted his creation to our hands, and we need to regard ourselves as stewards. We can talk about what the word stewardship should look like, but again, we've got this idea of stewardship, and in truly, we're talking about resources in the environment, stewarding those well. John, in the basis with John Calvin, we also have John Wesley, who talks about being a good steward. We don't only see this in scripture, but we do see this thread through our theological background. And what's really interesting is then when you look at the fruit of that, what's the fruit of this theology, especially here in the American church? Historian and professor Mark Stoll at Texas Tech wanted to look at the religious roots of the American environmentalist and conservation movement. And what did he find? He posits that the conservation and environmental movements of America was birthed out of the church. He says, specifically pointing towards the Reformed Protestant Calvinist branch, it's been treating the environment as a religious concern for nearly five centuries. We think of environmental problems like global warming as secular issues, but history reminds us that they've always been moral. I'm looking through the folks who pioneered the conservation and environmental movements, he sees the fingerprint of the American church on it. And so when we think about a time before, whenever creation care, environmental stewardship is being preached in our churches, what is the product of that? Not just a movement, but also we can put it in a person. So Teddy Roosevelt was a member of the Reformed Church, grew up very devout, a father who discipled him, He, especially in his youth, a very, very strong faith, taught Sunday school, something that really imbued within him his faith. And then even as president, regularly attended church in Washington, D.C. And if he was not going to attend church, this was at a Reformed church in D.C., he'd write to the pastor and say, "I regretfully will not be here this Sunday." And as he was leaving office, he wrote a letter to that pastor and said, "My greatest regret of leaving office is no longer being a part of your church." And so we do see this man who took these teachings to heart. And while he brought conservation to the national scale, he did not do this perfect. He is not a perfect man. He did not do conservation perfect. We do see what could happen if taught from young. This creation care in our churches, Teddy Roosevelt calls conservation a great moral issue. Of all the questions we have come that have come before this nation, short of the actual preservation of its existence in a great war, there is none which compares in importance with the great central task of leaving this land even better for our descendants than it is for us. Mark Stoll, the historian, says this in Time magazine as he was doing his research: "I realized how easily Presbyterian evangelical righteousness translated from church pulpits to the political podiums. This church imbued Roosevelt with a moral courage to take on the concentrated wealth that corrupted American democracy and dominated the economy at the time. This same moral courage was necessary to drive American environmentalism. Calvinist churches fostered a particularly strong interest in nature and natural history. John Calvin himself regarded nature as a place where God drew nearest and communicated himself, and he spoke of the natural world as a theater of God's glory. To many Calvinists, nature study had an aura of sanctity and as a moral occupation for men, women, and children alike." Wow. What if this was our present day? What could we do? And so this is why at the Evangelical Environmental Network, our mission is really to help our fellow evangelicals reclaim and rediscover that call to creation care. And then also then to put that into action, to not only have this be something that's taught in our churches and a focus of our churches, but working towards putting this into action for a safe climate and a healthy, pollution-free world for everyone. And as we look at these, our three policy pillars, or what we're looking for in terms of action, is first, does it defend life? Are we protecting human life from the threats of climate change, of pollution? Are we protecting, are we defending that life? Are we protecting God's creation? Are we bringing making sure all of creation can thrive? And then also looking at holistic well-being, especially as it comes to jobs in the economy, especially with the promise of new economic opportunities with clean jobs. These are the things that we're looking for whenever we are evaluating actions to take. So I want to share with you a couple things that we have found that works and doesn't work. And one thing that we have found, I'll start with what doesn't work. And you may have already heard this here at this conference, looking at this information deficit model, which is simply assumes we've got a gap in knowledge. Folks don't understand what the problem is. So if we fill that gap with more information, we just need to give more teaching, give more resources. We just get the information in folks' hands, then they will accept the science and take appropriate action. Well, what we have found, and then also throughout social science as well, is that this model doesn't work. It's not enough just to give the information to assume this knowledge gap. And not even that. We find that it actually can backfire and be counterproductive. And so this is a study from 2017 where asking a group of a survey asking, is there solid evidence of recent global warming due mostly to human activities such as burning fossil fuels? Probability of agree on the y-axis. And on the x-axis, it's based on, essentially, you could translate that to climate literacy. How much do you know about climate science? How literate are you in the science? And what we see is a big divergence. About one group who, with more information, yes, they do agree with that statement, but with the other, it actually decreases. More information decreases their acceptance of this. And what we find is the split is political. May not be surprising, but that's what you find of a political split based on your political ideology and your worldview. So more information can actually backfire. It's not enough to do that. It's not enough just to fill the gap. So what then can we do? And I have to say, this is really discouraging to myself as a climate scientist. Worked very hard on figuring out all the uncertainty and being very rigorous in our science, and I'm presenting it to you and you still reject it. This is so frustrating. What can we do? Well, I want to point back to Joanna. She really helped flesh out this problem in her wonderful talk on AI, is that simply we're more than our brains. We can't just engage the intellect whenever we're talking about something like climate change. We've got to not just stay in our head, but we have to engage our whole selves and look to something more holistic when we're talking about moving folks to action. And so I love this quote from this study from 2019, looking at stories versus facts. What they write is, in this research, we argue that the deficit approach to communication underestimates not only the critical role of emotion in rationality, but also the formidable force of motivated cognition. In some countries, an individual's stance on the issue of climate change has become a marker of identity and a potential threat to social affiliation. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Although it may seem irrational to ignore scientific evidence, the high social and neurological cost of updating beliefs is likely to eclipse factual accuracy. There is something going on more than just our intellect and taking in facts. And what we found at EN, and this is what Reverend Mitch Hescock says all the time, and Catherine Hayhoe says as well, that we have to connect not just with the head, but we need to move this down to the heart level. We need to engage not just our minds, but our will, our emotion. Again, Joanna encapsulated this so well. And then for us as Christians, and especially reaching out to our brothers and sisters in Christ, we have to engage our faith as well. It's not enough just to engage the mind. And so this is where I posit a holistic connection model. Yes, we give them information. You have to engage the mind. We have to talk about facts. But first, we can't ignore emotion. Emotions are so important. Compassion, moving folks to compassion. Anxiety and fear, worry. Those are really powerful emotions. Frustration. How do we connect with our values? We need to connect with folks' values to elicit that action. And then also our will. Do we have the will to take action? And that together can lead towards that behavioral change and action that we desperately need, and that, John, you well just so pointed out how important it is to get to that spot. And so I just want to share with you a couple best practices that we found and that we employ at EAN whenever we are engaging with church leaders and with churches on climate change. First, make it personal. Second, connect to values. Third, make it local. And fourth, focus on solutions. So I'm going to walk through all of these for you. Make it personal. And I know Dorothy covered this really well earlier in her talk, but the power of storytelling. This engages not only the mind, but also the emotions, and is an avenue of connecting with those values. And this is what we train our leaders and our advocates to first, to know your story, know why you care, really articulate that so that you, whenever you're in your church or in your family, you can share a very powerful story about why this matters to you. Has anyone, when using that deficit model and starting a conversation around climate with starting with that kind of scientific facts, what kind of response do you get? I'll tell you what I get. Often it's hostility sometimes, glazed eyeballs. I'll tell you though, when I start with a story, people lean in. They want to know why I care. And it breaks down some of those barriers that they might put up if we just barge right in with climate and facts. Storytelling, and especially knowing your story, is an incredible door opener to having really productive conversations and receptiveness. Often I start with talking about my kids, about how I want them to have a safe and healthy, vibrant future, to be able to see all the amazing things in God's creation that I've gotten to see and live that healthy, fulfilling life. And that's why at the Evangelical Environmental, we focus on children's health, because surveys show that whenever folks give what is their top reasons for wanting to reduce global warming, the top reason, all Americans, Christians, and non-Christians, is to provide a better life for their children and their grandchildren. The power of that. I think also for the young people in the room, your story about why you want a future, a safe future, that is so powerful. Second, we find protecting God's creation, second highest amongst Christians, and then preventing the destruction of most life on the planet, higher with non-Christians. I'd say that those are pretty much the same thing said in different ways. You may disagree, but again, we see that the power of making that personal connection, especially with our children, with the people that we love, their health and their well-being, really connects with people. And so again, that's why our focus is on children's health at the Evangelical Environmental Network. We look at how climate impacts health in general, but also we look at pollution, and especially looking at our children. And again, from this is a wonderful study I can point you towards in the resources on children's health, fossil fuels, and climate. From 2022, but really goes through how extreme weather, heat stress, new vector-borne diseases, migration, food insecurity, how this is impacting our children, but also all of our health. And with the most vulnerable, including the poor and people of color, most at risk. One thing I do want to point out is that fossil fuels, they don't only emit CO2, they also emit harmful pollution, harmful air pollution, and that's why they've got air quality up there as well. And so we found that for folks who, you know, climate isn't what we're going to, there's too much resistance there. Looking at pollution has really been an incredible way to opening the door, especially for folks who feel like climate is too far away, too far removed. You just can't deny the impact of air pollution, which is coming from that same source of our CO2. Air pollution, medical research over the last decade has found very clear links, especially for young children, whether that's in utero or as young infants. Exposure to the air pollution, soot, microscopic particulate matter, smog coming from ozone is linked to asthma, ADHD, allergies, and even autism spectrum disorder. And that we look more broadly, that air pollution is responsible for 9 million deaths worldwide and even 200,000 American deaths each year from poor air quality coming from the combustion of fossil fuels. This is an immediate problem that needs to be solved right now, that is difficult to deny, and then also has the co-benefit of addressing climate change. Second, connect to values. And I know Dorothy led folks through this also. Know your audience. What I love about this is that as scientists, this requires doing our research, and that's something we're really good at. We're really good at that. Ask questions, listen, find out what matters to who you are speaking to, and then help them make that connection to climate and environmental harm. And from that 2019 study, another wonderful quote, it is always crucial to tailor messages to the needs of a specific audience. But this is especially true for a psychologically distant threat and politically polarized issue like climate change. We've got to have these tailored messages. And so this is what we walk our the folks that we're training in our churches through, is helping them make that connection. What are the people and the places and the problems that your particular church is called to serve in ministry? And what is that connection then to climate in an unhealthy environment? Again, family. Folks care about the people in their lives and want them to be healthy. There's national security implications, clear racial justice implications, impacts on poverty, hunger, refugee crisis, war, human trafficking. Again, we're focused a lot on health as it translates with family. We often frame things, again, in defending life. Our motto is creation care is a matter of life. And what we've found is that this has been a really powerful way to connect with many conservative Christians who have a deep pro-life ethic. I was just speaking with a woman who is so distrustful of climate change, of democratic politics and politicians. But when I told her that mercury pollution from coal-fired plants a decade ago caused brain damage in 1 in 6 infants and babies, because it's a powerful, mercury is a powerful neurotoxin. And because of action that Ian was a part of to reduce that mercury pollution and eliminate it from coal-fired plants, it's 1 in 6 children who no longer has that debilitating neurological damage. She's like, tell me more. I need to know about this. I had no idea. And so connecting with these values is really powerful to getting folks who you think would never listen to you and take action on a climate solution. It opens the door. Another powerful value to connect with in our churches is sharing the gospel. How often do you hear, we're just focused on sharing the gospel in our church? That's our mission. Well, I want to tell you a story about Pastor Dean Van Farrow in Cleveland, Ohio, who's one of our key champions that we work with at Calvary Reformed Church. And he has a deep heart for spreading the gospel. And so what he did was one part of their church's creation care ministry is just simply to go around the neighborhood and pick up trash. They do litter pilgrimages around the neighborhood. What they found was after they've done that consistently for months at a time, folks start coming out of their houses and they come and say, thank you. Thank you for cleaning up our neighborhood. These are people who would never step foot in the church. But because they are acting out a creation care action, they're in the neighborhood, they see them doing good. Now Dean and his members get to have a conversation about why they're doing it. They get to have a conversation about Jesus. And I have to tell you, whenever I go around and talk about I am a Christian and a climate advocate, and I care about climate change, they're like, what? You're a Christian and you care about climate change? Tell me more. This gives me an opportunity to share my story about why I care. And the heart of that is because of my faith. And I get to share Jesus with who I'm speaking with as well. So I'd argue that creation care is actually central, especially in our 21st century, for sharing Jesus with our neighbors. Make it local. So another thing that Pastor Dean said was really impactful, and this is where we can bring back some really targeted data. What really made an impact for him of taking the next step in his creation care ministry, was learning that his hometown, where he pastored, of Cleveland, Ohio, was the number two asthma capital in America. And he thought about all the kids with asthma in his congregation. And making that connection between high levels of ozone triggering and causing asthma attacks in his community, and knowing that it's coming from the majority of the sources coming from fossil fuels, from transportation in his city. This information really motivated him of seeing that local connection of why it matters. You can look at extreme heat and how in each of our cities, this is the number of extreme heat days above a heat index of 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And I'm sorry, I can't translate that into Celsius. Someone else will have to do that for me. But 10 more days of those high heat days for Cleveland are projected or have happened over since the first, not the first Earth Day, but for several years, the last 40 years in Cleveland. And that really mattered to him, especially knowing that for his area in Ohio, 86 degrees was kind of the threshold for seeing peak hospitalizations because of heat stress in his city. He's beginning to see this is a big problem and impacting people in my city. Climate Central is a wonderful resource to get state and city by city breakdowns of this local data. When you make it local, it makes an impact. And then finally, focusing on solutions. We're always focused on helping folks find what is that appropriate action, essentially walking them through some steps of this. And because the truth of this is again, going back to that 2019 study, finding that climate change, unfortunately, is an issue which elicits low engagement, even among concerned segments of the public. What happens? So this is what we walk folks through. I'll take a step back. We're focused on, first, figuring out what matters to them, helping them make that connection. How does climate impact that? And directing them towards a climate solution or an action that connects with what they care about. And the reason why we do that is because if we get folks to care, we engage their minds, their emotions, their values, their will. They care, but then they don't have an appropriate action that they can get to. What does that lead to? Despair, hopelessness, paralysis. We have to direct folks towards appropriate actions. Sometimes it feels hard to take action. I have to change the whole energy system of the United States and the world to solve this problem. Or I've done something in my home, but does that really make a difference? It can feel hard. Is it what I'm doing? Is it too big and out of my reach? Does it make a difference? That can also lead you to feelings of hopelessness. And so I love this research by Ed Maybach at George Mason's Climate Communications Center to get folks to actually take that next step and take action. All you have to do is make it fun, easy, and popular. And so that's really our guide, especially on the easy part. At EEN, we try and make taking action as easy as possible of doing that work, as much work on the front end so that folks can just come in. People are busy. You've got a lot of things to do, but can do something meaningful as quick and easy as possible. What we find is when we can make it easy, oftentimes they're having fun and feel really satisfied. And the more folks that we can get to take some easy actions and have fun and share that with their friends is becoming more and more popular. And so that's really kind of our guide with what we try and walk our folks through. And so I just want to end with sharing with you a couple stories from our folks in their churches who are working with us and kind of what we've done to walk them through this process and what the result has been. So this is Pastor Nate Goodson. He pastors in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at Prayer Chapel Christ Church of Christ. And what Pastor Nate really cares about is his community. He cares about their health. He is part, had put together a community association that's focused on, especially around violence in his community and getting the young people involved and mentoring them. He cares deeply about his community's well-being, their health. He cares a lot about childhood asthma. He's noticed that a lot of the kids in his congregation suffer from asthma. And so whenever we went and shared with him about how fossil fuel pollution, traffic pollution especially, the soot and the smog, the poor air quality in Philadelphia is contributing to these asthma attacks in his congregation, he paid attention. And he wanted to do something about it. And so he's become an incredible advocate within the Philadelphia area for clean transportation. And has been gathering pastors within Philadelphia to make this a key issue for them so they can protect the health of their congregations. Going back to Pastor Dean, he also really cares about his community's health also. And one thing that happened a few blocks down the road from him was at a senior living facility called Franciscan Village. They found this leaking natural gas well right in the center of this senior living facility. It'd been leaking for years. No one knew what it was. They were smelling these smells. They didn't know what it was, though. They actually kind of laughed about it. But then when they were doing a renovation and expansion of the site, they realized this was a natural gas well that was abandoned and not properly plugged and was leaking all this methane and other toxins into the air, exposing the residents to these really harmful toxins. Dean cared a lot about that. And so not only did he help raise awareness to get the well plugged, but also at the same time, the EPA was proposing new rules for setting safeguards to stop methane gas leaks. And as we know, methane is a more potent on the short term greenhouse gas than CO2. And actually, given that, reducing methane levels over the next few years in the short term can actually drive down warming even faster than reducing carbon dioxide levels. And so whenever we walk Dean through all of these benefits of plugging these methane leaks, he was like, I want to give a testimony at the public comment period for the EPA. And so he testified with us and shared why this mattered. Having strong methane leak safeguards was important to him and his community. It was really powerful. And we helped him put the testimony together. I also want to share about Jack Joseph at Vineyard Columbus Church, a mega church in Columbus, Ohio. He also testified with us for those stronger methane safeguards to reduce those methane emissions. What he did, he testified with us, and then we helped him turn his testimony that he gave to the EPA into a letter to the editor to his local church or to his local newspaper called We Are Called to Defend the Life and Health of Our Children, and lays out his arguments for his community to see. Well, it wasn't just his community members who saw this letter. It's also his senator, Sherrod Brown, saw this in the newspaper. He decided to write Jack a note, and I'll try and read it. He said, good comment in the Dispatch. Thank you for speaking out. We all have so much to do for our country. So whenever you find out what matters to you, and then we love to come along and help find that appropriate action, and then to share what you found with others, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. I've shared a lot of success stories. I want to share one story that didn't work so well. I was leading one church, pastor, he came to me and he said, I want to talk about creation, care, and climate. I want to do a sermon on creation, care, and climate in my church. Can you help me? I was like, okay. And he's like, you're a paleoclimatologist. I really want to address that myth, that misunderstanding that, climate is just part of an Earth's natural cycle, that it's really us. So I was like, okay, these are my talking points. He goes and gives the sermon. It bombs. He was using that information deficit model. in that. He had half the congregation, some in the congregation were really jazzed, but a very vocal part were, this is not good. The good news was he wasn't deterred. He's like, okay, I need to take a step back and I need to find something that's creation care related that my congregation can accept. And so he was part of this local CSA food distribution network called Fresh Harvest. He made the church be a distribution site for those Fresh Harvest boxes. It connected with their value for a healthy community, healthy foods, and also it now became a spot for neighbors to come to church and they could build that relationship with them. And so this was a great baby step for them to work in the creation care area. They then did another activity called Pedal to the Park, of where they all the families got together, went biking on a bike trail in the city, and counted and cataloged the different trees they found along the way. And then when they stopped at a rest stop, my colleague Marcus Cole, who's our director for church engagement, walked them through the importance of trees and the urban heat island effect, and also how it's our poorest neighborhoods and our communities of color that get the hottest during a heat wave and are most exposed to heat stroke because of housing practices in the past that were unjust and unfair. Took a fun event like this to then teach about climate, heat, health, and racial restoration. It's really powerful. And so we're excited to continue to work with these churches to take that next step. And so another kind of best practice is don't despise humble beginnings. They can really lead somewhere far as you walk with these communities and churches to build up to something really meaningful. And so just in conclusion, again, make it personal, connect to values, make it local, focus on solutions, and we try and make it fun, easy, and popular as best we can. And so if you're interested in partnering with us, this is just some of our information. You can volunteer with us using the QR code. But if you want to share creation care with your church, we've got a program, our EEN Partners, where we train you to help integrate creation care into the life and rhythms of your church. If you want to advocate with us for climate action, we have our EEN Champions program and are always giving opportunities of what's the latest happening policy-wise to get involved with. That's what Dean and Jack did with us. And then if you only have 2 minutes, we have regular action alerts where we've got pre-written comments on things that are moving through Congress and can send a letter super quick, super easy to your policymakers. And so I hope that you all join us in having some fun, and we promise to make it as easy as possible at the EEN. Thank you.
Thanks to our speakers. Unfortunately, we're considerably past time. I hope our speaker will stay for a few minutes if you want to ask her something personally, but I really appreciate what you had to say, and thank you for presenting.